Another beautiful day in Alabama. Might get a little hot. James Spann, the weatherman, says close to 90. So, got to believe that. But anyway, it is still a beautiful day. Football is here. Fall is here. And we are rambling on Big Noon Sports. Lars Anderson, of course, is my co-host, my partner. And then there's Justin Jones. Hey, Justin, leave the show with you. What's going on in your world? I love to just catch you with your mic.
Nothing much. I'm planning for a busy weekend. I know, Matt, we got the postgame show on Saturday. I'm going to a Thomas Rhett concert on Thursday in Birmingham. And then Talladega on Sunday. So I'm just trying to get rest while I can right now before I'm nonstop all weekend. Oh, did we lose you? Lars, are you still there? Of course, the second I jump in here to the show, we lose both Matt and Lars. We're going to work on getting them back together. I think what we'll do is just throw in some music real quick. Give me just a second, and then we'll get Matt and Lars back and continue Big Noon Sports.
Internet and on telephones. I mean, you just, if you don't have it, Lars, you're like lost in the entire world. You can't communicate, you can't talk, you can't look anything up. It's almost how fragile we are and connected. It's almost embarrassing.
You know, I was telling a friend of mine this morning, when I left New York and left the Sports Illustrated offices and moved down here to Alabama, one of my biggest concerns was not having an IT person at my beck and call, right? Who could so now, yeah, when internet goes down, I essentially, and like most people who work remotely, they can't do their job. You know, there's certain things that I can do, you can do, but fundamentally, you just have to stay connected. But hey, the good thing is we got it up and going, and it didn't wasn't the old AOL dial-up, right, where it would take 15 minutes to get connected.
And make all those weird sounds.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Like fax machine used. Fax machines, how dated is that? I visited a person's business the other day, and they had a fax machine. I went, that's great. Keep it right there. And I think they actually used it occasionally. I guess now when you scan and send faxes, it's a little bit more understandable. But now that you can just copy, paste, and send, it really doesn't matter that much. But, you know, we were experiencing some problems with my Wi-Fi around here. Just a couple of weeks ago, you guys probably recall because I couldn't get on for a while. But so I called my provider, which is Spectrum. I'll reserve comment because I have ups and downs with them, certainly. But I called them and I said, look, this is really, really important. I'm doing my job. I'm doing a radio show. And they very calmly said, sir, 60% of our customers are working from home. In other words, you ain't anything special because you got a radio show.
Yeah, and yes, I'm with you. Hey, you know, I was just scanning about scanning some stories this morning, and the New York Post is just infatuated with Alabama, and the Post ran a piece about Alabama and their betting odds to win the national championship. And right now, Alabama is plus 5,000 to win the college football playoff, according to BetMGM Sportsbook. And that gives Alabama the 12th best odds to win the national title. And what they're saying in this story is, you know what? You might want to buy this right now. Because you can make a case that this is a time to, you know, put some money on Alabama because the odds are so long. Because, you know, they still have Nick Saban. They still have star players up and down
defense,
the lineup.
Defense.
They're 15.5-point favorites on the road against Mississippi State. And I think a convincing win over the Bulldogs, you'll see Alabama's odds go up, right, to win the national title. But then after that, you just look at the schedule. They travel to Texas A&M in week 6. But then they get the benefit. They got Arkansas, LSU, and Tennessee all at home. And I think the game with LSU on November 4th is essentially going to be a college football playoff elimination game. And then, you know, you Alabama would have to navigate Auburn, of course, and then most likely Georgia in the SEC championship game to get into the college football playoff. But they're capable of doing it. They have the talent, and they just need to get more consistent play, as we've talked about, at the quarterback position. But the good thing is, I believe in the second half of the game on Saturday, it's like Alabama and Jalen Milroe, they figured out who they are, right? And I think Jalen is going to play to his strengths, and I think the play calling is going to play to his strengths as well. I mean, one thing, you know, his intermediate passing game is not great, right? We all know that. But, man, he throws a beautiful deep ball. And an accurate deep ball.
Does that make sense, though? Let me just stop right there. You can hit a guy 45 yards down the field, but then you have trouble with 15. Is that a Chuck Knoblauch thing?
Well, I think it's a reading the defense thing, because you've seen on his interceptions this year, he's just locked in on one guy. Right. And it's the corners and safeties who are reading his eyes. And he needs to get off of that first read. Or if he wants to make that, if he believes that his first read is going to be open, you know, shift your eyes to the other side of the field and then come back. Right. Cause that will freeze the safety and the corner and give you a better chance of, say, hitting, you know, that like 10 yard out route. You know, he's got the arm, and he has shown accuracy. He is so dynamic with the ball in his hands, and he's electrifying as a runner. I mean, he's an exciting player. But I still think, you know, there's work to do of building the offense and catering it to his specific skill set, right? Because his skill set is so different than Simpson and Buckner, and now that they have they've you know flat out said that Jalen Milroe is the guy, I think you'll just see the offense again be more tailored to him. And I was surprised actually yesterday, Matt, at what Jeff Spiegel told us, that he believed that Ty Simpson was going to come out and start the second half of the game. And I that did not enter my mind at all, just because Nick Saban was so definitive at that press conference now 8 days ago, which I think we're going to remember at the end of the season here as a real important moment. But at that press conference, when he just said, Jalen Milroe is our guy, and he's our guy moving forward. And that was a very, you know, definitive statement that he's going to stick with him. And he didn't want Jalen looking over his shoulder. And I think it paid off so much because, again, I mentioned this yesterday, in the Texas game, Jalen was a different player after he threw that first interception. It's like he couldn't get over it. And in the game on Saturday against Ole Miss, well, guess what? Now he knows that he's not, there's no fear of getting benched. He throws the interception and he just moves on and he plays a brilliant second half. And in that second half, as we talked about, I think there was a signature play, right? The long touchdown pass where he just got absolutely lit up and he knew he was going to get lit up by that, Ole Miss defender. And, you know, him jumping up, after being on the ground, as we said in our podcast, it was like the Jerry Maguire moment when Rod Tidwell, the wide receiver, catches the ball and everybody's worried that he's going to be hurt and Jerry's running out of the tunnel to get to him. And then he pops up, you know, and the crowd goes crazy. And it was that moment.
Again, we're battling some issues here at the Tide 109 studios with Big Noon Sports, but conveniently, it is about time for our first break, so we'll go ahead and hit a break. And when we come back, we'll have Matt and Lars continuing their discussion with Alabama football, what's coming up this weekend with Mississippi State, as well as Jalen Milroe and the rest of the team. Thank you so much for listening to Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide sports.
Laura Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at LauraLee@TheBamaBroker.com. That's LauraLee@TheBamaBroker.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky partially sunny this afternoon. Will maintain the chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms through tonight. The high today 85, tonight's low 68. Tomorrow a mixture of clouds and sunshine with scattered showers, possibly a thunderstorm. The high 85. I'm James Spann of the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 85 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
Brought to you by, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage. Lars and I went out and visited her last week. What a delightful person, and she can sure as heck help you. All right? Get in touch with her. Hey, Lars, heard something this morning that I thought was really, really cool. Saturday produced the highest total television ratings in the history of what my dad used to call the idiot box. In the history of television, more people watched college football. And when you stop and think about the lineup, Florida State Clemson started at 11. Then at 2:30, you had Alabama Ole Miss, and I believe that's when Colorado Oregon started as well. And then you had an unbelievable nightcap with Ohio State and Notre Dame literally going down to the last second and the last inch of the field. And all combined, it was just an astronomical number of people watching college football. And then I later heard, as kind of a footnote to that story, that the NFL is now getting unbelievable ratings. And I guess that could lead to last night. And what I wanted to mention about Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts, when he was first a starter at Alabama, was accused of a lot of the same things that Bama fans are talking about with Milroe. And understandably so. Hurts had a hard time checking down, had a hard time with the reads. Last night, Hurts, three or four times, checked one, two, three, four, and then went back to two or three. It was just amazing to see his readability and what he could do once he got in the pocket, and then once he adjusted in the pocket to continue to find open receivers. And he could have run seconds into it and picked up big yardage. But no, he was going to throw the football, and then he would complete them. And I just marveled at how good he was last night, and it made me think, patience, like Saban says, is really a virtue now when it comes to Jalen Milroe.
Yeah, and with Jalen Hurts, you know, he's not playing his best ball right now. He had a couple interceptions, but you're exactly right. I mean, you know, just the way that he is seeing the field is just incredible for the most part. Again, not his best game last night. And what's scary for the rest of the NFC is that the Eagles haven't even come close to playing their best football, and they're 3-0. I mean, this Eagles team, to me, they look like, I know everybody's really high on San Francisco, but I would take Jalen Hurts over Brock Purdy every single day. And just, you know, I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback improve as much as Jalen Hurts has from when he was a freshman at Alabama to what he was, you know, last year and in the Super Bowl, and continues to be. I mean, he is just really an incredible football player. And that's just, I think, is a testament to his hard work. I think it was really smart for him to transfer to Oklahoma and be under the tutelage of Lincoln Riley for two seasons. Was it two seasons? I think. Or maybe it was one. I don't remember. Two. Matt, is there a quarterback in your mind who has made as big of strides as Jalen Hurts?
It looks like we lost Matt.
Lost Matt.
Lars.
Okay.
But I would throw, I think up until this season, a lot of people would have said Josh Allen, but he's kind
absolutely.
Of, he's kind of fallen off.
Yeah. Josh Allen, you know, when I wrote that, the quarterback whisperer with Bruce Arians, Bruce was adamant that accuracy can't be taught after a certain age. And to him, the marker is like, by the time you're essentially a sophomore in college, you either have it or you don't. And, in Josh Allen, he didn't really have it when he was playing at, Wyoming. But he did, you know, the big arm and everything. But man, he has come on, and he still tries to be Superman out there too much, and he takes a lot of big hits. And you know, you can do that when you're a younger player and as big as he is, but he's got to be smarter about protecting himself. Otherwise, his career is going to be cut short. And in with Jalen, I mean, it is just so remarkable the improvement he has made with his accuracy, his ability to see the field, his understanding of what defenses are doing to him. But I also want to go back to what Matt was just talking about the Nielsen ratings for college football this last weekend. The number one, the most watched game, and this really shouldn't come as a surprise, it was all about Deion Sanders, right? And the most watched game was the blowout. Colorado at Oregon had 10.03 million, which is crazy. And then you have Ohio State, Notre Dame had 9.98 million viewers. Florida State, Clemson, 6.71. The fourth most watched game was Ole Miss at Alabama with 4.61 mil. Fifth watch was Iowa at Penn State, 2.75. Then you have 6, USC at Arizona State. 7 was Texas at Baylor. 8, Arkansas at LSU. 9, Auburn at Texas A&M. And 10 was Oklahoma at Cincinnati. And even that game garnered 2.17 million. So, just a great slate of college football games. And you know what? The nation watched. What was your favorite game of the weekend, Justin?
I think, definitely the Alabama game, probably. I mean, that's a little biased, but I also liked, of course, in the NFL watching Tua, because I've been a firm Tua believer. Despite the popular opinion to like hate on him for no reason. So I was so happy to see him kind of prove people wrong and go out there and dismantle the Broncos.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that Ohio State Notre Dame game and just the gritty performance by Ohio State coming back and winning the game winning it on the last play of the game just with brute force up the middle. And I just want to.
But they're not physical enough. They're not physical.
Yeah, right. Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker, is fact checking me. And, she just texted me that, Jalen was at Oklahoma for 1 year as a graduate transfer. Yes. And you know what? We've had this debate. Is Jalen, do Alabama fans have more of a right to claim him or do Oklahoma fans have more of a right to claim him? I would argue that Alabama fans do. What do you think about that one, Matt?
They had him longer, you know. Does that make a difference?
Alabama had him longer.
Right.
Yeah. And he graduated from Alabama. He's an Alabama graduate.
Yeah, but he got his master's at OU. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think he did.
Laura Lee.
Now, Laura Lee will get, she'll figure that out. Yes, she'll get out the bottom of that. But, yeah, so, hey, why don't we try to fix some of our technical issues? Let's take a break here, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Big Noon Sports.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Hey, this is Reagan, owner of R&R Cigars, the Cigar Mansion in downtown Tuscaloosa, located at 2703 6th Street across from the Home 2 Suites. Come down to R&R and see why we're the ultimate cigar and bourbon experience. With over 165 bourbons and 5 private barrels, our selection of bourbon is unmatched. We have the best cocktails around and our cigar selection is legendary. Our lounge and service are world class. Come and experience the luxury of the mansion and see why it's a world renowned cigar and spirits destination.
From our home base in Birmingham, Alabama, we are here treating patients from every generation across the United States and from around the world. We're here for the rookies and the dreamers trying to make a name for themselves. We are here for the achievers
who are resilient
and won't take no for an answer. We're here for the coaches,
athletic trainers, and mentors
who are shaping the next generation of legends.
We are here for you,
aggressively pursuing victory over injury.
Learn more at andrewsportsmedicine.com.
Laura Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama broker, who's as roll-tied as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's Laura Lee at thebamabroker.com. Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Indeed, it's Big Noon Sports. Kerry Clark's our guest in a moment. Lars, you had one little addition to our previous conversation.
Yes, I just have to talk again about the Swift effect, the Taylor Swift effect on Travis Kelce and the NFL. No, I'm serious. This is unbelievable. No, Matt, this is unbelievable.
I know, 400% increase in jersey sales.
And added more than 300,000 followers to his social. And I think, look, the Swift Kelce situation absolutely upstaged the fact that it was announced that Usher will perform at the halftime of the Super Bowl. And just wait, Sunday night, there's going to be millions and millions of young people who don't give a crap about the NFL. They're going to tune in to watch Kansas City and Kelce. And will Taylor Swift be there, play the Jets? I'm telling you, this may be the highest rated game in NFL history, and it's because of Taylor Swift.
Just for a shot and a glimpse of her in a luxury suite, cursing? Is that what all these people are watching for?
Yeah. Well, if whatever she's interested in, whatever she is interested in, her fans are interested in. You know, it's really incredible. And now there's rumors.
Is her popularity higher than the Beatles?
In terms of numbers,
I think you'd have to say yes.
But yes.
In terms of percentage.
I don't know.
Assume with Taylor Swift as a percentage as were the Beatles in 63.
I don't know. I wasn't around in 63. But I do, like she, it appears that there was, so Taylor was in Kelce's suite at Arrowhead Stadium, and, you know, the cameras caught her up there, obviously, cheering on, and then when Travis Kelce scores a touchdown, she yells, "Let's effing go," and she's there with, sitting next to Travis Kelce's mom. And so people were waiting outside of the suite for her to emerge, right? Camera phones ready, ready to record. And she never did. But what did come out, and nobody noticed at the time, was a popcorn machine that had a big popcorn machine that had a cover over it. And that's, I'm telling you, that I believe everybody is saying that that is how she got out undetected.
It's magic. Pulling Taylor Swift out of a popcorn box.
Yeah. And apparently how she gets out of concerts is she hides in like a custodian cart. And they have one of her bodyguards dressed up as a custodian to push her out.
That's first of all, that's the most clever, or is it cleverest? Help me, Mr. Grammer. That is the most interesting part about this story to me. I am not infatuated. I worry about some of these people that are just, well, what are they called, Swifties?
Swifties.
I think they kind of lost their minds.
I've started listening to her music, and it's really good. She is good. She's talented, and she does all the stuff on her own. There's a documentary that she did that was on her, sort of commissioned by her, but that follows her around, and it is so revealing, and she has so much talent. I have so much respect for her because of the work that she puts in, and you know, she's the real deal, and I can understand why she has this this following that is just unbelievable. It's like the world's fifth largest economy is Taylor Swift. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, okay.
And she sold out Arrowhead Stadium twice. And it must have been pretty surreal for her to be up in the box, right? She's up like in the nosebleeds and looking down, and she's got to be like, oh my gosh. Like, all these people came to see me twice. I mean, I'm sure it was just a different kind of experience for her. And also, I don't know if you saw this too. Once all the Kansas City players saw Taylor Swift up in Travis Kelce's box, they were just like, oh my God, Taylor Swift's here.
Are you kidding me?
Yo, even Patrick Mahomes. And then as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, there's no way. The Bears have no chance. They have no chance.
Is it like, let's win one for Swifties?
Yes.
This is crazy. I mean, I thought.
No, you got to see the video. It's on. There's a TikTok of it, and all the players. It's like they are just like, what? It's before the game. They're out, kind of stretching. They're not even in uniforms yet, and they look up in the box, and there she is. And they are just, they're starstruck. And I mean, my buddy Kerry Estes, he texted me like midway through the game, and he's like, oh man, I didn't know Taylor Swift was going to be there. It was because he actually, I'm embarrassed to say this, he convinced me to take Chicago getting 11.5 points or something.
So now not only are you losing it, but you're blaming it on somebody, calling them out on air. Yes. Lars, your gambling is out of control.
Oh, it was $10. It was $10. But yeah, no, we weren't
talking this much about Taylor Swift, but all right,
the effect is real. I'm just saying it's going to be the highest rated game in NFL, most watched this, and it's a dud of a game. Kansas City is going to destroy the Jets. We all know that, but it's going to get the highest ratings, I believe, in NFL history for a regular season game.
All right. Throughout all this, you have convinced me of one thing, because as we talk about often on Big Noon Sports, we are both crazy about music and virtually all genres.
Yes.
There are a few that I really, really, I don't like the old, real, real twangy country, and not a big fan of rap. But if you like it, then I'm going to listen to it. I haven't avoided Taylor Swift, but I haven't tried to listen to. So, I've got a lot of windshield time this afternoon. Got to drive over to Odenville, get a little barbecue. So I'm going to put some Taylor Swift on. Everybody can't be wrong here. Millions and millions follow her. I just thought it was a genre that I wouldn't like.
No, Matt,
if you back it, then I'll listen.
Yeah, you got to give her a try. And because I was the same way, I was skeptical, but I've been listening to her for the last like week or so, and it's good. It's really good. She is just tapped into something very powerful.
Oh,
and it's not just like, you know, teenage girls. It's not.
No,
like,
she's from All right, as long as we're doing this, deep dive away. She is 33. She is from West Reading, Pennsylvania. Let's see. She's now in Nashville. I know she has a huge, huge beach home in, like, Delaware or something. Did you read about it? No, Connecticut. I'm not even sure Delaware has an oceanfront, but... Because she got into trouble for doing something to the house that wasn't up to code along the beach. And then the other thing that I remember about her is it seems that everyone says, and I haven't listened, okay, that'll change. I'll have an update tomorrow. But she, in my view, is always writing about failed relationships and in some cases how bad guys are. Am I way off base?
Yeah, I mean, she writes very personal. I mean, she's a gifted songwriter, right? Okay. I love the fact that she writes her own songs, and she's really obviously a gifted singer, live performer. She is relatable, right? Because of her personality and her music, it crosses over, genres and generations. And there is just it's really hard to sort of understand what her mass appeal is, but her album Midnights, which was released late in 2022, it sold like 1.8 million copies, right? I mean, it's just it's crazy. And she has a really good ear in terms of how words fit together, and her songs, they convey a feeling that makes you imagine that you are sort of, you are the songwriter yourself, you know? And it's just she has a great way of just telling stories and creating characters, and she writes songs that take place at one moment, and then she writes songs where the verses give you like a series of events. I mean, she's just, I'm telling you, she is just very, very gifted at just drawing you in, and you feel like you're kind of like, in a way, you know, my favorite type of storytelling is put you there journalism. Like, I want the reader to be feeling that they're right next to Tom Brady in a scene from his childhood, right? That they're in the room. And that's what she does with her songs. It's like you're right there with her. There's like a sense of empathy that you feel. And all it's, right. Okay, I'll stop. I can go on.
Really go on a little swifty tirade here. I'd like to get back to some football if that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, but quickly, more info, and then we're going to bring on Carrie. She was named after James Taylor. Okay, I love that.
Yeah.
Her grandmother was an opera singer. Okay. All right. I'll listen to her. Right now, we'll get the opinion from Carrie Clark, who's a partner of mine on the weekend, longtime broadcaster and writer in the city of Tuscaloosa. Appreciate him joining us. Hey, you want to weigh in on this Taylor Swift commentary? Carrie, how are you?
I'm doing well. All I will say is I did not know she was named after James Taylor. That's impressive. Good fun fact.
I didn't either. That is a good fun fact.
Yeah, she had very affluent parents. You ought to see the house she grew up in. It's just absolutely beautiful. One of those old colonial old Pennsylvania homes, because it was in Pennsylvania. All right. Carrie, do you listen to her on a regular basis? That's the only question I'm going to ask you about her.
No, sir.
Okay. All right. I'm going to try it at Laura's suggestion. All right. Let's get your view. You and I talked about it extensively at Walk-On's Saturday evening, but for those that didn't hear you then, go over particularly first half versus second half with Alabama and their win over Ole Miss.
It was a tale of two halves. It was the worst of times. It was the best of times. What I saw in the first half, I felt like it was a flashback of the 1982 Alabama season that ended up in Bear Bryant's resignation. As is so eloquently pointed out in the book Chasing the Bear, which I was happy to review a few years ago. Thank you, Lars.
Thank you for that.
So you're welcome. And but in the second half, I saw a team that looked like a typical Saban team, a team that lined up and hit the other team in the mouth, not just on offense, but on defense as well. Anytime, I'm going to tell you what, you can play against a Lane Kiffin offense 50 times, and if you hold them to 10 every time, you're either going to go 50-0 or 49-1. And by holding them to 10 points the way Alabama did throughout the game, it was incredible. I would have never, I think I picked a score of something like 31-24, and I was off a bit. But the way that Alabama lined up in the second half on offense and defense was reminiscent of a typical Saban team. And it was encouraging to see. Last year, it was much later in the season. Last year, the Ole Miss game was somewhat of a turnaround for Alabama on offense. And maybe that will be the case this year, even though it was earlier in the season. But Lane Kiffin, for some reason, he has a way of bringing out the best in Alabama's offenses. I'm sure it didn't hurt having Pete Golding on the headsets over there, but Lane himself is the man in charge. And, you know, you wonder how many losses it's going to take by Lane Kiffin to Nick Saban before people keep wanting him to be the successor. Hopefully this was the one that put the final nail in his Alabama coffin.
Yeah, I think you're right. And his social media shenanigans aren't helping his cause with the Alabama fan base. What were you surprised? Let's go back to last week. Last Monday, Nick Saban comes out at his press conference and says Jalen Milroe has earned the right to be the starter. And he certainly suggested in forceful language that he is the starter moving forward. One, were you surprised by that? And then two, was there any question in your mind that Jalen would start the second half after struggling in the first half? Were you expecting to see Ty Simpson? And also just, you know, your general thoughts on how the quarterback situation has been managed.
Part one of the question, I was very surprised, Lars, that he made that announcement so early in the week, because that's not typically how he operates. Normally he would say that the competition is ongoing and we'll let you know Saturday who's starting. Not what he did. He looked at the tape and he evaluated the situation and he got up there at the press conference Monday and I was blown away that he did that. Part two, on the second half thing, I feel like that they don't trust either of the backups to win an SEC game at this point in time. Yes, it was interesting that they used Ty Simpson on the 2-point conversion and he was successful on that, but that was the only play he played. I feel like even though that Milroe, in my estimation, going into the game, was the lesser of three evils at quarterback for Alabama, which is not something you say often, I feel he was the lesser of three evils, but at the same time, he was the lesser of three evils. So I feel like that Saban felt like he did not have a choice but to play him in the second half because, frankly, Lars and Matt, that's who the team wants out there. They haven't allowed either of the other two guys to win the huddle or the locker room. They have allowed Milroe to do that, and he's done that. And because of that, he's the one in charge, and also, to a lesser degree, the fact that he has the most experience.
Is that what finally pushed Saban to name him as a starter? Is it because the team wanted him?
Partially, but also the fact that when they looked at the tape, he was – I hate to beat this dead horse, but he was the lesser of three evils. You know, as bad as he played in the Texas game, they saw things in that game, like two touchdowns taken off the board, and the ability to hit the long ball, the ability to scramble for yardage, the ability to make the change move on designed quarterback runs that are pre-called. And all those things were taken into account when the decision was made to play him. And all those things were taken into account by Tommy Reeves when he made the game plan for Ole Miss. Several things were taken out of the offense. It was simplified. We always used to hear about Jeremy Pruitt simplifying the defense. Well, Tommy Reese simplified the offense against Ole Miss, and they got the 24 points they needed to win the game, and the rest is history. But they made things easier for Milroe on reads, They took several plays out of the playbook that he had struggled on, and as a result, he played with more confidence and, at least in the second half, more execution.
Hey, on the note, the locker room, winning the quarterback, was there dissension? Is there dissension among this football team?
Not at the quarterback position. No. They all want Milroe. He's their guy. You know, he's the one that took the receivers to Tampa over the summer on his own. And he's the one that's been there the longest. He's the one that's been through more 7-on-7s and more scrimmages and more practices and more even sitting on the sidelines of games. They all know him. They all wanted him. The only hint of dissension I'm aware of, Matt, occurred in the quarterback room itself when Tommy Reese, a couple weeks ago, well, after the Texas game, asked Milroe to explain some of the reads he made, and he was unable to explain them, and there was a little verbal tete-a-tete between the offensive coordinator and the quarterback, and that got back to Saban, and I believe that had a whole lot to do with Milroe not playing in Tampa. Now that's, I've had that from more than one source. I'm not going to use the word suspension, but in effect, that's what it was.
Yeah, I still don't understand what happened in Tampa. I mean, that was the most alarming performance of a Nick Saban Alabama team that I've ever seen. I mean, and this goes all the way back to the. I think it was, but then look, Nick Saban was still building the team, right? When they lost to Lyle Monroe, but this team. I'm telling you this is my opinion that what transpired in Tampa, it suggested to me that there's big time locker room issues. And is it too much of a stretch to say that the players were ticked off that Jalen wasn't starting?
No, I don't think it's a stretch at all. And I think you saw that on the lack of effort on the play that we were zoomed out on due to weather issues with Jermaine Burton on the long touchdown pass, that if he had made more of an effort to catch it instead of letting it sail between his fingertips, who knows who'd be the quarterback right now.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Moving forward, how do you see Tommy Reese continuing to – develop and tailor the offense to Jalen's skill set? Because it seems to me, look, the other two guys, Buckner and Simpson, they are very, very different players than Milroe, right? And so now that the offense, now that it's been decided that Jalen's the guy, how moving forward is Tommy Reese going to tailor the offense to him?
I think it's going to be a rinse and repeat of what we saw against Ole Miss, Lawrence. I think you're going to see design quarterback runs. I think you're going to see more deep balls than normal. And I think you're going to see an emphasis on the running game, especially now that, at least in the second half of the Ole Miss game, the offensive line decided to get out there behind and do some blocking. And Jace McClellan erupted in that half and in that game, really. And the prior week, Roydell Williams erupted, so we know they can block when they have to. I don't know why it took this long this season for that to come out, but I think you'll see more design runs by the running backs. I think you'll see more design runs by the quarterback. I think you'll see more deep throws. And then they'll add a wrinkle or two at some point, like maybe bubble screens, things like that, that they know he can complete. What he's got to work on and what he showed signs of improvement on was mid-range. The Ole Miss game was the first time I'd seen Milroe complete any mid-range passes, and he had two or three in that game, and I was like, wow, who's this guy? But he did it, and that will be a smaller part of the game plan because that's not his strength. But again, you know, deep throws, design quarterback runs, and more of a just pound it type philosophy. And they're playing a team this weekend that they should be able to pound on the running game.
I agree. Gary, tell everybody where they can read you and hear you throughout the week.
Well, I'm just making a transition to being the Alabama beat reporter for Tide 100.9 FM. So I'll have some stories on there. This is currently my final week at TiderInsider.com because of my pending job change Monday to come full time at Tide. And as far as hearing me on Friday nights, they can hear my high school shows from 6 to 9 and 10 to 11. And on Saturday nights, they can hear you and I and Mark McGriff 2 hours after the Bama game as we wrap things up on the Tide postgame show.
Lots of fun, too. I enjoy working together again, as we many, many years ago. I guess we worked a little bit together. But anyway, Kerry, thank you, sir, and I'll see you later this week.
All right, Matt. Thank y'all for having me.
You bet. Indeed. Lars, when you started the show and talking about odds on Alabama winning a national championship, I had a really, really good question for you and our audience, and I want to pose that to you in just a couple of minutes as you listen to Big Noon Sports presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
Go inside the Alabama Crimson Tide with the Gary Harris Show.
Coming up Wednesday morning on the Gary Harris Show at 9 a.m. on Tide 100.9 FM. The NASCAR report with Matt Coulter, plus the Bama football recruiting report with Andrew Bone. And we'll have a guest from Mississippi to preview the Alabama-Mississippi State game from the Bulldogs' perspective. All that and more coming up Wednesday on the Gary Harris Show.
Catch the Gary Harris Show Monday through Friday, 9 to 11 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
100.9 Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky partially sunny this afternoon. Will maintain the chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms through tonight. The high today 85. Tonight's low 68. Tomorrow a mixture of clouds and sunshine with scattered showers, possibly a thunderstorm. The high 85. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 85 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is Big Noon Sports. Matt, Lars, thanks to Kerry Clark, and also Justin Jones is our producer of Big Noon Sports. Hey, real quick, what were the odds of Alabama winning the national championship according to the New York Times?
It was a New York Post and story, and it was according to MGM, they have the they're plus 5,000, which makes them the number 12. They're the 12th. They have the 12th okay. best odds to win the okay. national championship.
What does that mean? Plus 5,000. As far as betting. I mean, if you bet $100, how much would you win?
You know what? You're going to have to I'll have to get back to you on that.
Oh, well, now I see why you're failing miserably at the old gambling game.
Well, no, I yeah.
I'm joking with you. It's just a lot easier when you bet games, I understand.
I just bet spreads. Basically.
Sounds like you went a lot.
Yes. What is important here is that they're the 12th. They're number 12 in terms of favorites to win the national championship, and the point of the story was that you can get a really good value. And I'll explain all this on the other side. I mean, it's a little bit complicated.
11, the other 11 in front of them, I'd like to know.
Yeah, yeah.
Inquiring minds want to know on Big Noon Sports. Back in a minute.
It's the Tide 100.9 30K Workday Payday.
Woo!
Win cash every weekday 8 to 5. Here's this hour's cash code.
667. Again, that's 667. The code is 667.
Enter that code now on the Tide 100.9 app. Click on the 30K Payday button and enter the code for a chance to win $30,000.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
Yeah, like coming up right now. Big Noon Sports presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage. It's Matt and Lars, Justin Jones, our producer. We're talking about gambling. Do you remember, Lars, like 30 years ago? You wouldn't talk about this on a radio show. You didn't talk about it on television. You didn't talk about odds. You stayed away from talking about point spreads and favorites. But now, It's all a part of the lifestyle. You see the commercials on television all the time. You hear people talking about it. And they do entire TV shows now talking about where and when to place your bets and overs and unders and propositions. All right, now that I've over-explained that, 5,000. Alabama plus 5,000.
Yeah, all right. So, yeah, you caught me a little flat-footed there in at the end of the end of the hour, I fumbled the explanation. So if you're going to bet $10, and put this in context, according to, like, the MGM Sportsbook, Alabama – the odds of Alabama winning the national championship are plus 5,000 odds. And so, and that makes them the 12th team. They have the 12th best odds of any team in the country right now to win the national title. So if you were to bet 10 bucks on plus 5,000, you would win, if Alabama wins the national championship, you'd win $500. You bet $100, you'd win 5,000, right? Yeah, you bet 100, you win 5,000. You bet 200, you win 10,000. $200 bet with a chance of winning 10,000 is pretty good. However, the implied win probability that the bookmakers have, right? The implied win probability of plus 5,000 is 1.96%. So Vegas is saying right now, Alabama has a 1.96% chance of winning the national title.
And that exactly works out mathematically as to why it's 50-1.
Yeah.
And why don't they just say 50-1? There must be some other part of this that I don't quite understand. But if you bet $10 at the track on Anderson's volleyball to win, you'll win $500. Bet it on the nose, that is. So,
yeah.
And, you know, I don't know much about it with baseball. What if a team is plus 160, does that mean if you bet 100, you'll make 160?
Justin?
We need to get a gambler.
We can't ask questions.
I think plus 160, I think it's different when you're talking about games. Like, I think that's like points, right? I'm not much of a gambler either, so I don't know.
Well, baseball is different. I at least know that. I've never put a dime on a baseball game. I might have bet a beer or something, but I don't quite understand when it out to the side it'll say plus 160. And I think that's if you bet 100, you win 160, which is less than 1-1 odds.
So our next guest will know exactly the answers to all these questions.
Tony Curry is a rambling, gambling man.
He is indeed.
I know the first part is very much true. But anyway. All right, as long as we're talking about that, it just rolls. What a great segue to my next little topic here, Lars. Alabama is at Mississippi State. Double check my figures here, but I think I'm correct. The Tide is a 15.5-point favorite. If I were a guy that would put a nickel down, I'd be all over Alabama. Then they probably cover by 14. But the really interesting one, Lars, I can kind of understand that. You're on the road. You're a favorite. Mississippi State's not top of the SEC. But how about Georgia 14.5 at Auburn? What do you that I have a feeling on that. What about you?
Well, that the obvious is you got to take Georgia. I don't know. Rivalry game. That does not look right.
I did hear a report earlier today that Georgia is really, really banged up. And that's one thing we all know. Odds makers will take that into account and they will adjust the line. So I wonder if that's not why it's so low. But even if they've got some injuries, they're so good and they're so deep, I would still take Georgia.
Yeah. Auburn showed last week that they have a ways to go, right? Especially on offense. I think they can run the ball and I don't know. If I'm Hugh Freeze, I roll with Ashford. I would start him, and just see what you could do, because against Georgia, you're going to want to, chew clock, limit possessions, shorten the game, and, you know, win, special teams, try to win turnover battle, make it, kind of a slugfest, not a track meet. And see if you can, you know, gut out a victory kind of between the tackles. I mean, that's not really Hugh Freeze's style, but you gotta play to the strengths of your players, right? You gotta tailor the game plan to what your players can do. And throwing the ball down the field is not a strength. When Auburn is playing an SEC team, we saw what they are, who they are last week. So, that seems like a really strange line to me.
Hey, before we bring Tony Curry on here in a minute, what did you think about last night? Monday Night Football. You had the Eagles over the Bucks, 25-11, and your Bengals held on to win 19-16 by the toe, the pride of Fort Payne.
Yeah, Evan McPherson, he missed a 56-yarder at the start of the game, but then came back and was money clutch. And, you know, Joe Burrow is clearly hurt, and it's his right calf strain. We don't know if it's the severity of it, but he aggravated it last week at the end of the game in week two. And there was question all the way up to kickoff whether or not he was going to play. And, you know, he ended up going out there. And the thing is, because it's his right calf, you know, when he's all power comes when you're throwing the ball comes from your legs, and especially that right leg, and it's your calf muscle, because that is your launch leg, right? And and Joe just his body is off, and so he really has trouble throwing the ball down the field. He can't scramble, and so he can't really protect himself, and that's such a huge part of his game, is his maneuverability in the pocket, buying more time, making plays off script. He can't do that right now because of the injury. And so what the Bengals did, they just went in shotgun the entire night, and they had Joe just acting like a point guard and getting the ball out of his hands. I think the average was in like 2.1 seconds, you know, and so he's not really pushing the ball down the field. But he is just, it's just timing short stuff with his receivers and tight end. And, you know, it's kind of ugly, but, it worked. And the defense played well enough for them to win. And the Rams, they're a shell of what they were when they won the Super Bowl. I mean, they're missing Cooper Kupp, who's out with an injury. They really don't have a ton of talent on the edge. And Aaron Donald is getting a little bit older, although he was pretty impressive last night. And, but it was a big win for the Bengals, who are 0-2. And now they're 1-2 going into Tennessee next week. And we'll see if Burrow, if his health improves. But interestingly, Aaron Rodgers has had this injury before, and he texted Joe before the game, just telling him, hey, you know, just battle, do your best. And then after the game, he said, man, you're just such a competitor. There's only a few people in the world who know what kind of pain you're in, and I'm one of them. And you know, you showed leadership and grittiness, because you went out there, you did what you had to do, you got the win, and then you didn't make a big deal of the injury, right? You downplay it. And that's what leaders of the team do. And the guys in the Cincinnati locker room, they see that Joe Burrow is hurting, and he's hurting bad. And I've never had a calf injury, Matt. I don't know if you have, but apparently it's something that lingers, and it's easy to aggravate. And this is something he may be dealing with for the entire season.
Can you shoot it up?
you really can't because it's a muscle.
It seems like it's a muscle.
You lose the feel
down there or your plant foot.
So. Yeah, I don't think you can. I mean, apparently it's quite painful to be playing through that, and you know, and the thing is, he's vulnerable out there because he can't protect himself.
That questions why they played, you know, in my
mind. I agree. Let me ask you this
as we go to break.
Yeah.
Did A.J. McCarron dress?
He did not. No, he did not. He's on the practice squad.
Okay, because he is not on their roster that I just looked up.
Yeah, no, he's on the practice squad. They did dress a third quarterback, a kid named Reed Stennett, who nobody's ever heard of. But because they were worried that Joe would go down, and then the backup is Jake Browning, and then if he goes down, you know, you need that third quarterback. So they honestly, I don't think Zach Taylor and the coaching staff knew that Joe could go until right before the game.
Well, he gutted it out, and then the toe from Fort Payne made it happen. Tony Curry, we're going to have a blast next on Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley's Hansing Union Home Mortgage.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky partially sunny this afternoon. Will maintain the chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms through tonight. The high today 85, tonight's low 68. Tomorrow a mixture of clouds and sunshine with scattered showers, possibly a thunderstorm. The high 85. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 87 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
Welcome back in, Big Noon Sports. Justin, what was your takeaway from the NFL games last night?
Last night we watched some of it when I got home. It was football. I think the Eagles got off to a slow start, but the Bucks, man, they're going to have a very long season. I think their defense is just not. It's incredible because the year they won the Super Bowl, their defense was stellar, full of young players, and a lot of those guys are still there. I remember the big story was they retained everybody in the offseason, yet they have not played at that same level since then.
No, they haven't. I think they missed the offensive creativity that Bruce Arians brought to that team. Of course I'm biased because I've, you know, essentially done two books with Bruce, but, I don't know. And I really like Todd Bowles. But this is going to be his last shot, at maintaining a job. You know, Tampa Bay did start 2-0. And so, you know, they're 2-1 and still in really good position after 3 weeks. But, all right, we got, the one and only, the legend, Tony Curry with us. Tony, how you doing today?
The Big Noon Sports Network, baby. I'm so happy to be on the show. What's going on?
Well, what have you been up to, man? What's the latest in your life and your career?
Well, first of all, let's talk about that Bengals game last night. A win is a win, and I just could see the pain and suffering in one Joe Burrow's face last night after that game. You could just tell how big of a win that was and the big whiteout they had up there at Cincinnati last night. But, man, what an excruciating game to watch. And you know, as banged up as he is, and I know that not having training camp was a big part of that. I know he's banged up calf. The fact that he put the ball up 49 times last night should tell you that he's still got a little bit of a push left in that leg. But that was – you want to talk about a difficult game. And I don't know what the numbers are. I know they started 0-2 last year. As a matter of fact, I think they've started 0-2 for the last 5 years, I think the Bengals have. So that should tell you just about how resilient they are. And of course, a lot of it comes in with that line play. But I don't know how many teams have started 0-3, even in a 17-game schedule, how many teams have started 0-3 and made the playoffs. So that was a huge victory the last night. You want to talk about Philadelphia, though, man. If I had to put money on a team right now to win the Super Bowl, I don't care how they get it done. But Philadelphia, just from top to bottom, is just a masterful team to watch. They just do what they need to do to win football games. And every time I look up, it's 20-6. They're always winning 20-6 every time I tune in. But happy for my Cincinnati Bengals, and I will be at Nissan Stadium in Tennessee this Sunday to watch them trip up those Tennessee Titans again. So I'm looking forward to that. I know that's been a point of contention for the Tennessee Titans. They hate the Cincinnati Bengals. Another reason why I'm happy to go up there and perhaps watch them win on a late field goal again.
Well, I don't think they care for the fact that about 30,000 Bengal fans invade Nashville and, you know, going to Bengal Jim's tailgate, which is becoming more legendary by the game. What were your thoughts on Alabama and Ole Miss before we talk to you about Mike Leach and your friendship and just your remembrance of Mike Leach?
I'm going to go back the week before when Texas had a hard time against Wyoming. You had Georgia had a really difficult time against South Carolina. You know, people need to realize it's a 60-minute ball game. And you know, you watch Alabama, and I put a lot into line spreads, and I know a lot of people like saying that the line spread is but what a team's supposed to win by, so you get equal money on either side. That's a bunch of hooey. It is exactly what a team should win by. And whenever a team's covering the spread, then you see that spread go up, and that obviously means that team's getting better. For Alabama to actually cover that spread, I would have taken the other side. I had a friend of mine that had three dimes on Ole Miss. He always bets against Alabama. He's the biggest Alabama goober in the world because he does that. So if they win, he's happy. And if they lose, he can make some money. So I get that. But if you're Lane Kiffin, you got to be thinking to yourself, that may have been the best licking my chops opportunity he's probably going to have in quite some time. And they're sitting there nip and tuck the entire ball game. But again, Alabama in the second half, obviously there's some problems offensively speaking. I know that Jalen Milroe, now that he's the man, and I think, obviously, the more playing time he gets, the better. I was pleasantly surprised how often he ran the football early in that game, but it didn't work. But, yeah, just a kind of an ugly, sloppy game. But, again, if you just look at that second half and move that second half to the first half, Alabama looked like the old Alabama. It may be more of a 3 yards in a cloud of dust Alabama as opposed to that high-flying Tua Tagovailoa, Jalen Hurts type of offense that we're so used to seeing. But obviously, there's a lot of issues that have to be worked out on the offensive side of the ball for Alabama. But right now, they got a victory. And, of course, they're looking forward to going to Mississippi State this weekend as a 14.5-point favorite. And I kind of like that line.
Yeah, if I were going to go one way, I would go with Alabama on that one. Wanted to talk to you about a variety of subjects. But you became really good friends with Mike Leach, and we all miss him. I heard their athletic director just talking so fondly about him. And then you read quotes from Nick Saban. The man was just beloved. Tell us how you got to be so tight, and then tell us the halftime story, because that's my favorite.
Yeah. I had a headhunter who was working with me to find me some jobs. He flew me to Dallas and Charlotte, and I went to Atlanta to work at the game over there for a little bit when I was looking for my next challenge before I started the TKR radio network. And he gave me a list of, he goes, listen, I got a list of coaches and connections. And if you can use them in any way to make a podcast out of it or create a tape or whatever you want to do to it. So he gave me Saban's phone number and he gave me Kirby Smart's phone number. And I had, you know, phone numbers of athletic directors from across the country. And there was a phone number for Mike Leach. And of course, Mike was out there at Washington State. He was having an enormous amount of success out there in Pullman. And so I made it a point to text and or call every single coach. He must have given me 16, 17 different numbers. And out of all of those, Mike Leach was the only one that texted me back. And he texted me back almost
before I was done going through my list, and he's like, and I basically said, hey, my name is Tony Curry. I've been in sports radio for 30, 40 years, and I'm starting this new thing, and it was wondering, you know, maybe if I could get a conversation with you. And I basically wrote the same thing to each coach so they knew who I was. And he was the only one that responded to me. And I called him on the phone, and we had a conversation about 15 or 20 minutes. He was just like he is with everybody. And I was doing something called the Curry and Claypo Show at the time on a terrestrial radio station here locally in town. And I said, would you mind coming on Saturday night? Well, we were doing a relationship show. It was not a football show. It was not a sports show. And he said, I'd be happy to come on. I said, now we talk about relationships. He goes, I'll talk about whatever you want. And I said, great. And so he would come on every Saturday night. And we would talk X's and O's and talk about his football team. But then we'd also ask him some other questions about some relationship things and about marriage and about breakups and things like that. And, of course, that was right up his alley. So we had him on every single week, and he had a standing invitation. And depending on when they were playing, because they're on the West Coast, sometimes he'd be walking out of the tunnel. Sometimes, you know, I mean, I'm talking 30 minutes before a ball game, he would keep his appointment with us. And there was one Saturday night, I think it was about 10:30, and we hadn't had Mike on. He always called us, and I said, I'm going to call him and find out what's up to. And I called him, and you could hear a lot of noise in the background. And I said, hey, Coach, this is Tony, and you ready for your regular shot? He goes, listen, I'd only have a few minutes. And I said, that's fine. I said, just a couple minutes. And I said, where are you? He said, it's halftime of the Colorado game. I said, pardon me? He goes, we're playing Colorado tonight, you dumbass. And I said, I didn't realize. He goes, look at your schedule. And I said, well, listen, man, I don't want to bother you. And he goes, no. He goes, I got about 3 or 4 minutes before I have to do TV, and then we're going to start the second half. They were up 14-3 at the time. And he said, do you want to do it or not? I said, sure. So we started talking. So that was one of my favorite moments. Another time where I called him, we spoke probably for about 20 minutes. I called him on a Saturday afternoon, and I don't remember why I was calling him on a Saturday afternoon. I think I was just reaching out to him to see how he was doing. He may have had a bad loss the week before, and I spoke with him for about 15 or 16 minutes. We were talking about our families, and he was talking about eating duck sandwiches and how difficult the loss was the previous weekend. And I said, okay, well, are you ready to record something? And he said, I thought we were already recording. And I said, no. I said, I was just talking to you. And so he was willing to come off the shelf and talk about his family life and about some of the personal things he had. And we had a conversation for 15, 20 minutes, and I wasn't even rolling tape. And I said, no. I said, I want to ask you about the upcoming game and everything else. And so he was just a sweetheart of a guy. And you know, I say when I say he's misunderstood, I mean that in the way that he just had a huge heart, and he was such a great family guy, and just a quirky, eccentric type of guy, where there's only a few people in my life where you can say that's Mike Leach being Mike Leach. And that's why he got away with so many things. He did say some things that ruffled some feathers, but, you know, Charles Barkley's another one. That's Charles being Charles. Charles can say whatever he wants. It's Charles being Charles. Michael is one of those guys where you can say that's Mike Leach being Mike Leach. And that's what I loved about him. I just thought he was a wonderful man. And, of course, we'll celebrate his life and his death coming up a little bit later on in December, dead at the age of 51. I still can't believe he's not here.
Tony, what just bits of wisdom that Mike passed on to you that you still embrace today and remember and maybe even incorporate into your own life?
I think a lot of the things, Lars, was just be truthful and speak. You know, I don't want to say he didn't mince words, but he would tell you like it is. And if he didn't have time for you, he was not going to be a passive guy. He was not a passive individual. And probably some of his best sound bites you ever heard were when people were asking about, hey, listen, I'm thinking about getting married this Saturday. What should I do? And he just like sleep through it and try to make it to Sunday so you don't have to pull the trigger on that stuff, knowing that he was a family man, that he had a wife and children. But he was a good relationship guy. You know, the other thing that I thought was really interesting is I never saw or heard him get angry. And you don't see that from a lot of coaches on the sideline. Most coaches that don't get angry aren't usually in a job for very long. And I never saw him nothing really banged him up to the point where, you know, he lost his temper. I never saw him throw his headsets. He may have, but I never saw it. And, you know, it was so unfortunate because the last time I had him on our show was about a week before he passed away. and I was doing something with Curry and Klepo, and, you know, he couldn't stop coughing. And as a matter of fact, I ran that interview on your radio program when Jay Barker was on the Jay Barker Radio Network prior to being High Noon. And we ran that interview, and, you know, he coughed his way through the entire thing. And we kept asking him, are you okay, or do you want to cancel this? And he's like, no, I'm fine. He just kept wheezing. He said maybe he had pneumonia or something like that. He was gone, I think, 8 to 9 days later. So just an amazing individual, and what a sweetheart of a guy. And, again, I cannot believe. Was he ever going to win a national title? Probably not. He certainly wasn't going to do that at Mississippi State. And I venture to guess that maybe Washington State wouldn't be part of that Pac-2, previously the Pac-4, previously the Pac-10, previously the Pac-12. I bet that, you know, had he still been there, he brought such a brand name to wherever he went and wherever he coached, whether it was Texas Tech or Mississippi State or Washington State. He always just brought a great brand, a great notoriety to him. And you knew that he was going to bring a certain amount of success to those programs. And you're talking about a guy when he was at Washington State, and I want to say it was 2014, 2013, he threw the ball 74% of the time. I mean, he did a total switch on Navy. You know, they throw the ball three times a game. He did a total switch. And here's these quarterbacks. We saw Gardner Minshew this past week in the National Football League still swinging the football. You know, it wasn't because these guys were throwing the ball 70 times. It's because he had a great brand and he had a great system. He had the air raid system, a system that a lot of SEC teams still can't figure out.
Tone, can you hang through a break and talk about Auburn and Deion and Prime and
Absolutely, I sure can.
All right. Tony Curry is our guest. If you listen to Big Men Sports, as we go to break, remember the number this hour and your opportunity to win $30,000. The three-digit code is 667. Dial up the Tide 100.9 app, punch in those numbers, and who knows? You might win $30K. Back in a minute.
Built to win.
Ball game. Alabama wins.
Built for championships.
Heading for the pylon. Get the race. Win the race. Touchdown, Alabama.
Built by Bama. The Crimson Tide play here. Join us Saturday as the Crimson Tide head to Starkville to battle Mississippi State. Our coverage begins at 5 on your home for Alabama football.
Brought to you by Birmingham Racecourse. BirminghamRacecourse.com. You can be a winner too.
Look at SEC Sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Back on Big Gun Sports, presented by Haiti Sansing Union Home Mortgage. Our guest is Tony Curry. He's co-host Joe with him. Rock and roll with him.
Yeah.
I can go on and on and on about our relationship with TK. Tony.
We have lots of secrets about each other, you know, my friend.
Oh, that's why I just introduced you and keep going. Tony, Alabama has had a difficult time in the quarterback position. Apparently, it's a move across the state to Auburn, too.
Yeah, you know, obviously they got the loss this past weekend, and now they got this big test against the Georgia Bulldogs. And by the way, we always talk about smelly fish. I am really surprised. I thought that line would be closer to 18 or 19, so I'm surprised it's only 14.5. I think it's just a matter of, you listen, it's Hugh Freeze's first year, and I think we got to give them a lot of room and a lot of rope, and I think they're probably going to need a lot of rope. And I had them winning 6 or 7 games this year, and I think if you're an Auburn Tiger fan, you obviously know what Hugh Freeze did against Nick Saban, that you're looking forward to that big ball game at the end of the year. He's one of a handful of coaches, if not maybe one or two, that's ever won back-to-back seasons against Alabama. And I think that's one of the reasons they made that hire. But, again, I think it's just a matter of finding themselves and getting, you know, Hugh Freeze's recruiting class in there and using the transfer portal to shore up. But do I think Hugh Freeze is going to have success there? Absolutely. I think it was a better hire than bringing in Lane Kiffin, because I think what you get with Lane Kiffin is what you get. I think Hugh Freeze has got more room to grow. So I like the hire, and I think they're going to be fine, but I do think it's going to be a couple, 2-3 years down the road before we see what this team's really about.
again, Tony, let's go back to Alabama. And just how do you think Nick Saban has handled this quarterback situation? Were you surprised by the performance of South Florida? I mean, there's a lot to unpack here. And just let's just do like big picture, your assessment of where Alabama is right now.
I think maybe Nick Saban got a little ahead of himself and a little curmudgeon, if you will, when he started Buckner, and then he decided to go with Simpson first before, but he didn't even put Jalen in that ball game, which was really surprising to me. I almost thought that maybe Milroe was in the doghouse somehow, because I could not believe that he didn't get any playing time in that particular game. And then, you know, what do you know? The next week, he's the starting quarterback, and he's the man from this point forward. I think he sees probably the most growth potential in Jalen Milroe, despite the fact that he didn't look particularly good in the first half of that ball game. He did everything he possibly could do to win that football against Ole Miss the following week. But, yeah, what do they say when you have three, you don't have two? I mean, ask you freeze. I mean, he said the same thing after weeks one and weeks two, right? You got two quarterbacks, you don't have one. He said, but you know what? If we win it with two, we're going to keep it with two. Well, it didn't work that past week, and more than likely it ain't going to work against the Georgia Bulldogs this past week, although the UAB Blazers kind of blazed the trail. They put up three touchdowns against that stout defense, which really surprised me, and they got inside that 40.5 this past week. So, but I think, you know, once you know what you got and who you got and who your quarterback is, I think everyone's happier, and I think everything's going to be more copacetic from this standpoint forward. Now you can just grow. You don't normally want to have to wait till week four to figure out what you got, but I do think both teams, both Auburn and Alabama, now know where they're at and who they got, and they're going to run with it.
Tony, who's the best team in college football right now?
Oh, mercy. It's hard to go against Georgia until they lose a football game, and I just don't think they're going to be doing that. You know, I think there's a lot of interesting teams. I thought Oregon looked fantastic this past weekend. I think they had a lot on their plate, gathering up and going against what everyone was loving is this Colorado miracle. And obviously that ended with a huge thud this weekend. And it's thud number two. Part two is coming up this weekend, because I think USC may put a 70 spot up against Colorado this weekend. Michigan obviously looks really, really good. Texas, you have to give them just a nod, because, I mean, no one thought they were going to beat Alabama. We do a show on ABC 3340 called The Starting Lineup. Kip Kiefer and myself, Tony Curry, do a show every Saturday morning from 10:30 to 11 o'clock. Watch us. It's a great show. And Case Kiefer, who is Kip's son, who works with the Las Vegas Sun, said that Texas is going to a national championship this year. And, of course, he said that before the season started. I said, you know, they play Alabama there in the second game of the season. He goes, I know. Well, they end up getting the victory. So Ohio State, I think, has looked somewhat lackluster. They got Maryland this weekend. I don't think they're going to have a problem there. And another team I think, you know, is been very interesting, despite the fact that they only won by two against Boston College, but FSU. What a wonderful victory they got this past weekend at Clemson. My son was at that game, and there was no reason why FSU should have won that football game, but somehow they pull it out. Whenever you look at teams that win national titles, man, there's always one or two of those games they probably shouldn't have won, but they figured out a way to win. So I think FSU, I think Norvell's doing a good job there. I think that's going to be another team that a lot of people are going to be looking at the end of the year.
Just going back to Oregon, one of the great stories of this season is Bo Nix and how he's emerged. As I think right now Vegas has him the third leading Heisman Trophy contender behind Caleb Williams and the quarterback from Washington. Just your thoughts on just, again, his whole story and in, you know, having to leave Auburn. And we're still trying to understand why exactly he left Auburn. I'm assuming, and from what I've been told, it was mainly his issue with Brian Harsin. But, again, your sort of just analysis of an assessment of Bo Nix.
Well, I mean, obviously you had the lineage there, right? And he was going to be the next coming at Auburn, and now we're seeing him come with someone else. And I think that is going to be a point of contention where, you know, I think Auburn fans are like, oh, we're so happy to see him go, because, you know, but listen, I mean, he's a Knicks. He should be at Auburn. And the fact that he's put up the numbers, he's putting up 11 touchdowns, one pick right now. The guy is completing nearly 80% of his passes, folks. And we're talking 4 weeks into the season. This is not a one-game log 104, 131. The guy's only had 27 misses. And think about that. He's only 27. And you have to figure pretty much four or five of those are probably dropped. So, what, maybe 20 passes this entire season he has not completed? And he's working in a brand, and he's working in a motion there at Oregon that they obviously love to throw the football. So good for him, man. Congratulations what he's doing. He has been just a wonderful story this year in college football. He's been pretty amazing, but 11 touchdowns, one pick. I'd take that. And you can't tell me the Auburn Tigers, something wasn't meshing there, man. Something wasn't working there.
Tony, prime time. Go.
You know what? We know prime time. We know what prime time's all about. You know, I got to tell you something. I was rooting for the Rams when they played Colorado State just because, quite frankly, there was only so much prime time I could take. I know what he's all about, and I love prime time. He's the only guy in the history of sports to play for a World Series and a Super Bowl, and he probably should have won one of each. He won two Super Bowls. He's unbelievable. I think he's a great brand, and I think he's done a wonderful job at Colorado, but the party has ended now that they're playing some decent Pac-12 teams. But, I mean, it's been a great story, man. It's been great for college football. It's been good for college football fans to see what he's done. The fact that he went, it took 87 players and they were gone and came back in, he has been masterful at what he's done. And at this point, I forget who it was that was talking on ESPN. He's like, he's in Canton. He played Major League Baseball, played for, a World Series. And now we're talking about a potential Hall of Fame coaching career. I'm like, a Hall of Fame coaching career? Put the stinking brakes on, man. Pump the brakes just a little bit. We were talking two games into the season. Obviously, he won two games he wasn't supposed to. The Colorado State game, he just gets by. And then it came crashing down this past week. I would love to know what he said to his football team. I didn't see it. I'd love to see what he said after his football team after laying a 42-6 egg. I know a lot of people that don't like Deion. I do like Deion, and I wish him the best. But there was no way this team was going to go undefeated after winning one game last year.
Tony, before we let you go, how was the Striker Strong golf tournament with Robbie Glenn on last Friday? You know, we're big supporters of Striker and Striker Strong and Robbie.
Lars, Matt, I've played probably in 1,000 golf tournaments, and it's by far the best golf tournament I play every year. It is just the best love affair between a father and a mother and a son. It's just a miraculous story. The whole situation with the Tatton Rahman Brown syndrome is just a horrible situation that they have to endure day in and day out, second by second, minute by minute. It's just a beautiful love story, and I would implore anyone that gets an opportunity to go to Striker Strong on Facebook and see their story. I know they were on Facebook Live, I guess it was last night, thanking everyone for coming out. But they're using their platform for something that's a beautiful good for all of humankind. It's not just about Tatton Brown syndrome, but it's also about other individuals with special needs. Having a son with special needs of my own, I just love what they do, and my thoughts and prayers are always with them.
Tone, tell everybody the 50,000 different platforms you're operating on these days.
Yeah, we just started the Tony Curry Radio YouTube channel, so we've got 14 different shows to do on Tony Curry Radio. It's TKR. Please go to the App Store, whether you're Android, Apple, and just search TKR. There's three little letters. You get classic rock. We're going through a bunch of software updates and stuff, and our brand new YouTube channel now. You can actually see our shows and listen to them. We're on the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. But TKR, the three letters, download that app, and you'll get classic rock to the bone, and I greatly appreciate it.
Talk to you soon, Tony.
Love you guys.
Love you, Tony. Thank you, buddy.
Uh-huh.
All right, Tony Curry, legend. We'll be right back. This is Big Noon Sports.
The next Inside the Locker Room with Coach Wimp Sanderson and Barry Sanderson.
Tune in Wednesday. We'll go down to Auburn, talk with Bill Cameron, find out what's going on with the Auburn Tigers as they get ready for the Georgia Bulldogs coming. We'll also take your phone calls and we'll try to picket that and figure out if he's making a decision on the blue plate special to be announced on Thursday.
Inside the Locker Room, weekdays 7 to 9 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
Your business. Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Sky partially sunny this afternoon. Will maintain the chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms through tonight. The high today 85, tonight's low 68. Tomorrow a mixture of clouds and sunshine with scattered showers, possibly a thunderstorm. The high 85. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 87 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is indeed Big Noon Sports. Our presenting sponsor is Haley Fencing, Union Home Mortgage. You got Matt, you got Lars, you got Justin. And Lars, I don't know whether to thank you or come over there and bash you about the head, but we were talking about Taylor Swift earlier in the show, and of course, I had to type in Wikipedia and see where she was born, and see that she was named after James Taylor. Now my entire computer is scrolling nothing but Taylor Swift stuff. you know how they retargeting, right?
Yeah.
If they find something, they latch onto it and they bombard you. So anyway. I guess even if I didn't want to listen, here's Taylor Swift celebrates Travis Kelce's touchdown. Oh man, Kelce's woods. This is going crazy. But hey, you know, he did catch a touchdown. Did he do well statistically with her up in the Kelce booth?
Yeah, yeah. He had another good game. Look at the TV ratings of that game, in the Chiefs playing the Bears, because Taylor Swift's attendance had a notable impact, right? The game drew 24.3 million viewers, making it the weekend's most watched NFL contest. So those numbers are down 8% from the same window a year ago. But guess what? The ratings showed significant improvement in one demographic. Females ages 12 to 17 up 8% from a year ago. The broadcast also led in female audience in every major demographic. And Kelce didn't speak to reporters after the game, but he was spotted leaving the stadium with Swift by his side. And then there was a picture taken of them and leaving the stadium together, with Kelce driving a convertible and Swift in the passenger seat. And it's a really cool picture. It's like they're driving off into the Midwestern sunset. It's really cool. And Patrick Mahomes did say that he felt that he was under a little pressure to throw a touchdown to Kelce.
No.
And they went off script. And in the third quarter, Mahomes threw him a 3-yard touchdown. And Mahomes afterwards said, I think he wanted to get in the end zone just as much as all the Swifties wanted him to get in the end zone. I mean, I'm telling you. Taylor Swift, she's currently on break from her Eras tour, which resumes November 9th in Buenos Aires, Argentina. And look, I think, again, the Sunday night game between Kansas City and the Jets, even though Kansas City is going to roll them by about 5 touchdowns, I think it may go down. It may become the most watched game in regular season history because of what? Because of Taylor Swift. And just people want to see if she's going to be in attendance and what she's going to do. And do we get any more clues if what their romantic life is really like? But the thing is, when Kelce scored that touchdown, the way she reacted was not just as a fan. That was a reaction of a girlfriend. I mean, it's different. and so it's a pretty intriguing storyline.
I'm trying to think of others that would rival that. Would A-Rod and J-Lo?
Yeah.
Trying to figure out who's worth more. I know it's got to be Taylor Swift. Okay, she's worth $700 million, and Travis is worth $30 million. So,
yeah.
Any other celebrity datings or marriages involving athletes do you remember?
Got to be Beckham, right? And one of the Spice Girls? Isn't that the top?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good question.
Celebrity wise, have you got them in there? Celebrity. What about a female athlete that dated a famous guy? Any of those? Chris Evert when she was dating Jimmy Connors.
Yeah.
And then Chris Evert went on and married Greg Norman for a brief time.
Yeah.
I'm glad
she didn't
have, you know. Where did they
Julie,
meet, Lars?
Julie Ertz, the soccer player. Is married to Zach Ertz, the NFL tight end.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's pretty good.
And who's influencer and also the gymnast at LSU?
Livy Dunn and Paul Skeens.
The baseball player.
Yeah.
That's not a bad one.
Kings
went number one in the draft, didn't he?
Russell Wilson in Ciara. Is that her name? Yeah.
Is she a singer? I'm not. Yeah, I think I've heard of that. But hey, how did they meet?
That I don't know.
Anybody know? Was it at the Arrowhead concert?
The story is that Travis Kelce went to one of the concerts at Arrowhead and wanted to trade they trade bracelets there. Kim's the expert on the Taylor Swift. She's here if we need her.
Get Kim on here.
Kim, we got a question.
Yeah, I got you. What's up?
All right. Give us the backstory. How did Travis Kelce meet Taylor Swift?
All right. So basically, do you know Taylor Swift did her Eras tour over the summer and the spring, and she had 3 nights in Kansas City. And Travis Kelce went to one of the shows in Kansas City and wanted basically Taylor Swift's fans traded friendship bracelets, which is a reference to one of her songs. And Travis Kelce made a friendship bracelet with his phone number on it and wanted to give it to Taylor Swift, but never saw her after the show. So he went on this podcast with his brother and talked about it and said how he made one and couldn't give it to her, never saw her. And the quote from his podcast kind of went viral and it made it back to Taylor Swift. And so there were rumors going around a couple weeks ago that they had made contact with each other and all this. And then last week on the Pat McAfee show, Travis Kelce invited her to Arrowhead Stadium to watch him play. And she ended up showing up on Sunday.
Wow. Okay. So you really do know this.
I do know it.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift going to be in attendance of the Chiefs Jets game on Sunday night?
I wouldn't be surprised if she was, since she does live in New York City.
Are you a big fan? Do you listen to her a lot, Kim?
I do listen to Taylor Swift. Yes, I am a Taylor Swift fan.
And what is it about Taylor that you like?
I mean, I just like her music. I've been listening to her since I was 10, and I'm 26. So I've been listening to her for most of my life. I just can really relate to her music, literally growing up and stuff like that. I just enjoy her music.
Well, I do too. And Matt, we got to turn you into a Swiftie. So start listening to Taylor Swift.
Listen, if I like her music, you can never, ever call me a Swiftie. Have a great day, y'all. We got to get out of here. Have a blessed afternoon. Back in 22 hours.
From our home base in Birmingham, Alabama.